This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending Friday the 30th of May 2025. Hello. And welcome to this week's edition of the Hampshire Chronicle from the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. I am your presenter, Barbara Cairns, and today I'm accompanied in the studio by readers Daphne Poupart.
Hello.
Nick Cairns.
Hello.
And Paul Newman.
Hello.
The first thing to say is if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That's 01962 861229. This number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. However, before reporting the playback box as faulty, please make sure it's plugged in and fully charged up. As you listen to the recording, don't forget that you can use the buttons on your box to move on from an item before it finishes, or back to a previous track if you want to listen to it again. And for those of you with computers or tablets, as well as using your memory stick in the box, you can also access the weekly recordings of the Chronicle through our website, www.winchestertalkingnews.com. Just go to the website, click on News on the header bar, locate the recording you want to hear, and click Download. The recordings are listed in date order, with the most recent first on the list. Right. Let's take a look at this week's edition of the Chronicle, starting with the news. Here are the headlines. Work underway on River Park Pavilion. Council could fill in 3,472 potholes with CEO salary. And disabilities groups get together in tough times. And the first headline story, please, Daphne.
Works to build a 2.3 million pavilion at River Park have officially begun. Following Winchester City Council's decision last year to approve a total investment of £2.3 million to deliver the project, the pavilion is now being rebuilt for the benefit of communities across the district. Site setup is now underway at River Park ahead of construction starting in the coming weeks. Councillor Kathleen Becker, Cabinet Member for Healthy Communities, said, "It is great to see work begin on this site. The old facility was well used but was no longer fit for purpose. It has been a long road to get here, so seeing the building team on site today is a very welcome sight. The new community pavilion is going to welcome so many users. Cricket players, rugby players, and our local park runners will benefit from the new pavilion, making this space a hub of activity in an accessible, contemporary, and well-designed building. This development reaffirms this council's commitment to support our residents to live active and healthier lives, whilst helping remove barriers for women in sport and those living with disabilities. It also offers a new community space in the heart of our beautiful River Park." Management and Construction Services, MCS, the council's building contractor, is fully committed to deliver the project for users of River Park. Managing Director of MCS, Justin Whiteman, said, "We are delighted to be entrusted to deliver this new pavilion, which will serve as a vital asset for the local community. Our team is passionate about creating high-quality spaces that will stand the test of time. And we are proud to be part of a project that will have such a positive impact on people's health and well-being. We understand how important River Park is to residents, and we are committed to working closely with the council and local stakeholders to ensure a smooth construction journey." This project reflects a total investment of £2.3 million, which includes capital funding from the City Council, £1.5 million from the District Community Infrastructure Levy, and contributions from the Town Forum, the Pavilion Project, and grant funding from Hampshire County Council. Stride to Glown, a national practice working from offices on the outskirts of Winchester, is the design architect for the project appointed by the City Council. And that's accompanied by a CGI photograph of the pavilion as it should look when it's completed. Very sleek, very modern, all glass, solar panels on the roof, tables and chairs outside on a very welcoming terrace. It really does look great.
Council could fill in 3,472 potholes with CEO's salary. Hampshire County Council was at the pointy end of a lampooning by Guido Fawkes after the political website picked up on its job ad for a new CEO. In an article published on May the 19th, the right-wing bloggers claimed that, with the new chief executive's indicated salary of £250,000, the county council could fill 3,472 potholes, buy 7,142 wheelie bins, or employ 7 new bin lorry drivers. The county council posted the vacancy on LinkedIn after current CEO Carolyn Williamson announced she will be stepping down in July after a 4-year stint as the first female to occupy the position. Based in Winchester, but with hybrid working available, the job will go to a dynamic, forward-thinking and outward-looking chief executive. It also describes the role as pivotal, particularly considering the challenges the County Council faces with the imminent devolution and local government reorganisation plans. Defending the salary, which eclipses that of the Prime Minister by just under £78,000, the County Council pointed out that the role is far from a walk in the park. A spokesperson said, "The Chief Executive of Hampshire County Council is responsible for one of the largest public sector organisations in the country, employing approximately 10,000 people directly and many more indirectly, including via hundreds of Hampshire schools serving 1.4 million residents and managing a budget of over £3 billion per year for providing a wide range of complex and essential public services. The Chief Executive's role also goes beyond the delivery of services just on behalf of the County Council and is responsible for the delivery of a range of services to various other local authorities and public sector partners nationally. As well as leading the provision of vital services within Hampshire, the Chief Executive will also oversee major transformation and steer the organisation through significant financial challenges and major structural changes as it heads towards the biggest national shake-up of local government in half a century. This is a competitive salary for one of the most demanding leadership roles in local government. This is a critical investment in strong, experienced leadership, essential to protect services for residents and especially to the most vulnerable children and adults, deliver value for money and secure Hampshire's future."
Disabilities groups get together in tough times. Blue Apple Theatre has merged with the Minstead Trust. The two companies will operate under the Minstead Trust name. However, Blue Apple Theatre will maintain its unique identity and ethos, providing people with learning disabilities with access to creative expression through the performing arts. Blue Apple was founded in 2005 by mother-son team Jane and Tommy Jessop. After struggling to find a local organisation which was inclusive for people with disabilities, Jane set out to create a space which would champion perspectives like actor Tommy, who has Down syndrome. Since then, the company has delivered more than 30 productions to audiences over the south of England, including Shakespeare's Globe, where they performed an adaptation of Hamlet, with Tommy playing the titular role. Alison Frater, chair of Blue Apple Theatre, said, "Blue Apple has a long track record of producing inspiring theatre, delivered by and with learning disabled artists, for new audiences locally, nationally, and internationally. We're excited to be joining hands with Minstead Trust. We value its leadership as a forward-thinking and innovative provider of services to people with learning difficulties and autism. The merger will bring growth we need to build bold and courageous theatre that excites audiences and challenges social perceptions." The Minstead Trust brings 39 years of experience and expertise supporting people with learning disabilities on a case-by-case basis. Today, the Minstead Trust supports more than 320 people with learning disabilities at Fursey Gardens. We've admired Blue Apple for many years. Their creative activity and quality are exceptional, said Adam Dodd, CEO of Minstead Trust. By joining forces, we'll not only protect what makes Blue Apple brilliant, but also unlock fresh opportunities for more people with learning disabilities, particularly those who receive no funded support.
Thank you. That concludes the headline stories. I'll go on with the death notices now, and Daphne will follow with Christian comment. Here are the death notices. Bainbridge, John, 17th of February 1958 to the 10th of May 2025. John died suddenly at home on the 10th of May 2025, aged 67. Chaffee, Simon Paul, passed away peacefully at Winchester Hospice on the 8th of May 2025, aged 46 years. Charles, Tony, died peacefully in Winchester Hospice on the 8th of May. Hawkins, Christopher John, formerly of Sparshalt, passed away suddenly on the 15th of May 2025, aged 79 years. Geoffrey, Susan, formerly Matthews, née Perry, passed away on the 5th of May 2025, aged 80 years. Jerome, Ian Byron, passed away at Queen Alexandra Hospital on the 10th of May 2025, aged 78 years. Mushin, Stephen, on the 11th of May 2025, after a short battle with pulmonary fibrosis, aged 58. Spencer, Peter John, sadly passed away on the 13th of April 2024 at Basingstoke Hospital following a heart attack. Pierce, Howard Alexander, passed away unexpectedly on May the 3rd, 2025, aged 60 years. Stent, Veronica, known as Nikki, died peacefully at home on the 17th of May, 2025, aged 95. Christian comment has been written by the Reverend Sue Pitkin, the hospital chaplain, this week. She writes about the new Pope and my major life change. Thank you, Daphne.
I'm musing on the new Pope, Leo XIV, and the major life change he is going through. I can't imagine how it might feel to suddenly have such influence and responsibility on your shoulders, and I respect the calm and gracious way he's managed the transition so far. I'm delighted that he has such a deep concern for peace in the world, and hope that his support of the peacemakers will bring about the just and lasting peace between Russia and Ukraine and Israel and Gaza that we all long to see. Those of us who pray will persist in praying fervently for peace, even when the obstacles to peace seem insurmountable. My own life change is very insignificant in comparison with Pope Leo's, yet to me and to those around me it seems huge. I'm going to retire. Somehow I never thought I would, but now the time has come, it is the right thing for me to do. I love what I do as a hospital chaplain, and I've been privileged to share some deeply moving experiences with many people during nearly 16 years in post. But I don't have the same energy now, and I need to rest, reflect, and pray. I'm very sad to leave the many wonderful nurses, doctors, cleaners, maintenance workers, porters, chaplains, and others that I've worked with over the years, and I've already shed tears with some colleagues. I'm wondering how it will be not to be part of the incredible team who works so very hard to care for patients. I'm apprehensive, and also sure that God has many more good things planned for me. I need to wait and listen, and I'm sure Pope Leo will need to wait and listen as he grows into his new role. If you pray, please pray for us both. And that's from the Reverend Sue Pitkin.
Thank you. And now this week's letters to the editor. Nick, can you start us off with Dirty Entrance, please?
Yes, the first letter this week is from Eileen Berry. It pains me to say this, but at the reception in the Guildhall for the new mayor, I was disgusted how dirty the entrance to the Guildhall was. I went to hold on to the outside banister going up the steps. It was completely covered in pigeon excrement. Nobody had the decency to clean for the new mayor and VIPs. How can one possibly make excuses for the condition it was in? The mayor and his guests didn't need to be insulted or disrespected in that way. I am not a political animal. I follow no one. But I have respect for the mayoral office. Because he or she has to be above politics, working for the community and charities as best he can, it is still one of the highest honours to be achieved. To downgrade it in such a way that one could not but notice and dirty the surroundings for such an occasion. The mayor cannot comment, but I will. And finally, what struck me was the absence of supporting councillors in the cathedral. Where was the support for the mayor? From Eileen Berry, Priors Dean Road, Hairstock.
Act locally. This comes from somebody called Paul Anthony Newman in Full Flood. I was awakened this holiday Monday morning by flapping wings at my first floor windows, accompanied by that harsh, raspy staccato of one and then another young magpie, which triggered regrets at the evident absence of birdsong and nesting in my vicinity during this spring, and recalling my horror 40 years ago in witnessing the Stuka-like descent of a magpie and its savage decapitation of a young thrush. In parenthesis, in 1975 I was moved to pen a letter published to your sister paper, the Bournemouth Daily Echo, about a possible remedy. Such rumination was abruptly overtaken by the Radio 4 news summary concerning yet another atrocious nocturnal genocidal horror, but horrors plural in Gaza and Kyiv. These multiple overwhelmings can deflate all our hope and discourage our resolve. Yes, we can't do much, but there are many things we can do and which need doing. I can remain globally aware and engaged, yet still think and act where I live, nationally and locally, firmly grounded and rooted as much in its ecology as in its society and economy. The year-on-year decline in garden and songbird owes much to domestic cats' early morning prowlings and the daily predatings of nestlings by magpies and other species. It's in their nature. What of ours? We can have agency or influence and personal choice. Over-deployment of biocidal products, such as chemical sprays and slug pellets, in gardens and allotments, is detrimental to bird life directly through ingestion and indirectly through the continuing depletion of insect life on which many winged and ground creatures depend. Let's observe and even extend no-mow May into June, while applauding the examples of our cathedral, local councils and grass verges, and all who cooperate in so doing. Paul Anthony Newman, Full Flood, Winchester.
And Rod Murchie has a letter headed dysfunctional. The local elections, where allowed, once again showed how damaging and dysfunctional our voting system is. Across the country, we've seen results which don't reflect how people voted. For example, in the west of England, the mayor was elected despite 3 out of 4 voters rejecting them. This is not a glitch in the system, it's a feature. Whether in local or in general elections, first past the post, FPTP, distorts public opinion and damages trust in politics. It forces us to choose between voting tactically and being ignored, and leads to millions of votes, particularly those cast for smaller parties, being wasted. Time and again, it hands full control to parties supported by a minority of the electorate. Last year, Labour won a landslide on just 34% of the vote. With more and more people abandoning the two biggest parties, the proportion of votes needed to win would be even smaller. This means that in 2029, we could get a government that 70% of the public voted against. I'm very concerned about the future of our democracy if we don't improve how our elections work. That's why I support the Make Votes Matter campaign in calling for FPTP to be replaced with a proportional system, as in European countries, where seats match votes and all voices are heard equally. And that's from Rod Murchie, Sovereign Way, Eastleigh.
Annette Lodge writes about grass verge destruction. The wide grass verges, which run the length of Takedown Meads, were originally a design feature to reflect the downland setting. They amount to the equivalent of a substantial sized meadow, and at this time of year are full of nectar-rich buttercups, daisies, vetches and clover, plus a variety of grasses. All good fodder for our rapidly diminishing bee and butterfly population. Why on earth, then, does Winchester City Council waste taxpayers' money on cutting these verges right now? Not only does this destroy a substantial vital food source for insects, it is being done at a time before seed can set for next year's flowers. This is ecological vandalism, as well as a waste of money. Last year, presumably to appear to be doing something for the environment, they wasted money planting a few cherry trees in the verges, inappropriate to the downland setting and not even the type of native trees you would find on downland. This council needs some serious environmental education and not a bit of token greenwashing or an inappropriate pet project. That letter comes from Annette Lodge, Take Down Meads, Winchester.
And again, where are bees? This comes from Roger Cockrum of Friary Gardens. Are there any bees in Winchester? Despite masses of flowers in our garden, there seem to be no bees on them. So on our walk from Winchester down the river to St. Cross Hospital and back, we looked out for them. There are none. We talked to staff at Hillier's Garden Centre in Winchester, and they had also noticed a severe lack of bees compared to normal at this time of year. This is somewhat worrying to us. How am I to get any fruit on my plants? Roger Cockrum, Friary Gardens.
Well, I think they must have all come to Littleton because we've got plenty there.
Sit in the back.
Thank you, Daphne.
Right, now Tony Gaster, his letter's headed Water Thoughts. Apart from peace in our world, two things might be on our minds today: water use and energy use. It's made me reflect on how homes are designed today. For example, how much water do we run off from the hot tap until it actually runs hot? Not just a waste of water, but energy too. My home has been renovated over the years with no thought being given to water source and use. Whether we have a combi boiler or hot water tank, the link to that and various taps is important. I trained as a chemical engineer, but I wonder how many architects have such skills. We now have a jug by the kitchen sink to collect water from running the hot tap, which is then used in the garden. 4 litres collected each time. And that's from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
And Simon Lever writes this week, NIOBY speaks. I empathise wholeheartedly with Joanna Lewis, Chronicle, May the 15th, regarding development of housing estates on pristine greenfield areas, seemingly championed by a contradictory mission to build housing and commercial structures and a new town on pristine, treasured green land. A governmental oxymoron. Projecting a love of nature and all that goes with it, but planning large-scale developments? An army of central surveyors who know nothing of our much-loved locality, overturning any demands by residents and unity of local and county councils. NIOBYS, not in our backyards. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close Badger Farm.
Family Day at Grange. The Grange Festival is preparing to host a family open day with plenty of activities to enjoy. The event will take place on Saturday, May the 31st, ahead of its main festival running from June the 4th to July the 6th. Tailored for families with children aged 5 to 12, the day offers a rare opportunity to step behind the scenes of opera and theatre through a range of hands-on experiences. Attendees can take part in singing and dance workshops, trying on stage costumes, prop making and craft activities, musical instrument exploration and creative face painting. All activities are designed to be inclusive, welcoming participants of all ages and abilities. Alongside the workshops, guests can wander through the historic house and gardens. Families are invited to bring picnics or enjoy refreshments from the festival's pop-up cafe. Tickets are priced at £12 for adults, £6 for children aged 5 to 17, and free for under 5s with half-price concessions available. Free parking is provided on site. The Grange Festival Family Open Day is supported by Phillips Law. For more information or to book tickets, visit the Grange Festival website or telephone.
The need for play, and this comes from Gillian McMahon. Play has been a fundamental part of childhood in the UK for generations, and new research shows that 72% of British adults consider playing with friends among their fondest childhood memories. However, for millions of children around the world today, it's a very different situation. Extreme challenges such as conflict, poverty, child labour, and early marriage are depriving children of the opportunity to play and experience joy in their lives. That's why Right to Play exists. We use the power of play to transform the lives of more than 4.7 million children every year, helping them to stay in school, heal from trauma, and develop the critical life skills they need to thrive. Play is proven to be essential to children's learning, development, and well-being. On June the 11th, we'll be marking International Day of Play. This annual UN-recognised day highlights the vital importance of play for children and champions this basic right for every child. Find out more about the enormous benefits of play and how you can support our life-changing work by visiting righttoplay.org.uk. And that comes from Gillian McMahon, Executive Director, Right to Play UK, London.
If you have an opinion or a subject you would like to air in the Hampshire Chronicle, you can contact them on 01962 860 836. That's 01962 860 836. Or email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or you could write an old style letter to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We'll continue now with editorial comment, first person, and Belle Garum. Now, the editor heads up her article this week with "Well done to City Council over Pavilion." Nick.
After lots of delays, a City Council scheme is up and running. Construction has started on the £2.3 million pavilion at River Park. It replaces a rundown building from the 1970s. The new building will be used by sports people, including cricketers, rugby players and park runners, and also as a community space for the local area. Its history has been difficult. It originated with a local project which was highly attractive but ultimately too expensive. The cost of living crisis nearly derailed the whole thing a couple of years ago, but the City Council remained committed to the scheme, and that is now bearing fruit. It's the third big sports-related project in recent years, following the Sports and Leisure Centre at Bar End and the new pavilion in King George V ground in Highcliffe. So, credit to the City Council for getting it over the line, even if the new pavilion is literally in the shadow of the increasingly derelict River Park Leisure Centre, whose future is uncertain following the withdrawal of Southampton University from its Park Avenue campus plans. The council needs to get a grip of that. Demolition of the old leisure centre would be preferable to more decay. The Hampshire Chronicle supports the idea of a Lido. Lots of other people do too. They work very well in other places such as Portsmouth, Lymington and Petersfield. Perhaps the council should call their bluff and say to the Lido supporters, right, what are your plans? form an organisation. Let's talk. What do you think? Write to letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk and we will publish your views and we'll read them.
Now, George Hayter considers too formal or not enough in first person this week. Here's Paul.
Years ago, I ended up in hospital in Winchester after falling from a windowsill and landing headfirst on our stairs. Among the questions put to me at the wonderful Royal Hampshire County Hospital was whether I wanted accident emergency staff to address me as George or Mr. Hayter. Obviously, very few people these days want nurses calling them Mr. or Mrs. It's so reserved. Young people in particular like to be called by their forename or nickname. However, I was one of the stuffy old patients who do opt for surname. Mr. Hayter, please, I told the nurse. I like the formality of surnames when I'm dealing in a business-like way with people whom I don't know. Other times, though, I'm, like everybody else, using forenames. Formality is widely spurned and informality embraced nowadays, but I think that people who turn their back on formality are missing out on a style of behaviour just as enjoyable. Switching between the two, starchy formality and laid-back informality, enriches life. Both can be fun. The fun in formal situations varies from dry humour to barely repressible giggles. The fun in informality is carefree, outright laughter. My love of formality comes from my father. Hayter speaking, he would say. This was when I was a child, and my mother had answered the phone to someone wanting Dad. Mum would pass the phone to Dad, and he would open the conversation, not with hello, hi, or yes, but with Hayter speaking. I was awed by his formality. Let me explain why I think my dad's formality was something that groovy people today would do well to emulate. They also like formality, even if they don't realise it. People today want formality when they complain to authority, for example, when they are being asked to pay for something. And even today's most informal extrovert doesn't want strangers coming up and putting an arm around them. Everyone has situations where they expect formality, at a wedding, for example, and few people would argue against formality at a funeral, least of all their own. When you first meet strangers, things go better without too much intimacy or fooling around, at least during the introductions phase. If there is kissing at the initial meeting, I think most people prefer a peck on the cheek rather than the more informal bear hug. One of the great things about formality is that everyone at a formal event knows what they are supposed to do. And if there is anyone who doesn't know what they are supposed to do, they can simply copy everyone else. I admit this can be a problem if there's no one who knows what to do. Then you just have to resort to informality, I suppose. A lot of dancing is very informal these days. Take the dance floor phase of wedding receptions. Few young people have trouble dancing stylishly at a wedding reception, but anyone over 40 is vulnerable to condemnation for allegedly dad dancing. That means you look too old to do it. If only we were living two centuries ago, then dancing was a formal affair, and all the jollier for it. Everybody could learn the moves, with young and old stepping, turning, and holding hands in a preset formation. I know this made everyone smile because I've seen it in films based on the novels of Hampshire genius Jane Austen. Today's informal dancing means dancers have no instructions to follow. Instead, wedding guests stand in nervous isolation and are expected to come up with their own appropriate writhing and wriggling. It's a challenge Jane Austen and her mates didn't know how lucky they were. Perhaps the current retreat from formality is cyclical. I hope the fashion reverses soon so we can all return to a rich contrast between formality in our public dealings and informality with our family and friends. George Hayter.
And this week, Belgarum looks at the path to being a bestseller. Daphne.
Belgarum was pleased to hear news of the former editor of the Chronicle, Alan Cleaver, a familiar face in the 1990s and 2000s. He left in 2005 to move to Whitehaven in Cumbria, where he's been enjoying walking in the Lake District and publishing a number of books on those walks. His latest, The Postal Paths, is however a national one, published by Monoray at £22, and details his walking of Britain's postal paths, those walked and sometimes cycled by rural postmen and women. It is becoming a bestseller and is widely available in bookshops. Alan, 65, said, "They walked up to 20 miles a day, 6 days a week, in all weathers, to deliver mail to the most remote farms and houses. They usually walked the country lanes and footpaths already in existence, but often created their own shortcuts, which thankfully still remain public footpaths. Deliveries on foot were abandoned by Royal Mail in the early 1970s in favour of vans, and postmen stopped using bikes in 2014 due to health and safety concerns. Alan said, "Sadly, I didn't get to return to Hampshire for any of the postal paths. It's a beautiful county, but doesn't have many hills or the challenging footpaths. When Alan and wife Leslie are not walking footpaths or writing books, they spend their time doing not very much," said Alan, "and we're getting very good at it." And the book is available at Waterstones.
Thank you. Now let's take a look at what's on in the region over the next couple of weeks. Some of these are in the local events page, and some of these are little articles. A Royal Navy veteran from the Ark Royal will share his life story in a talk with a church group. Commodore Adrian Nance, OBE, will speak to a men's group from Redeemer Church, Winchester, on Tuesday the 10th of June at 7:30. And more information about that is available from Charlie on Charlie Matthews, all one word, at hotmail.com. We've got Emma Thompson is coming to a Hampshire hotel to celebrate Jane Austen's 250th birthday. Heckfield Place welcomes Emma Thompson, who will host a special screening of Sense and Sensibility, and she will talk, and there's a Q&A session to follow. It's scheduled for Sunday the 31st of August, so some time off yet, from 6:30 p.m. to 10 p.m. Tickets are priced at £50, and you can book at the Heckfield Place website. There's a quiz night. There's a quiz night at Bishop's Waltham at the United Free Church. That's on Saturday the 7th of June. Doors open at 7 for 7:30. And teams of four or six. And there will be a ploughman's supper, £10 per person. You can book that from Jenny on 0797 352 9415. There's family fun with the great and good. This is the Good Festival, which will be held on Sunday the 15th of June at Dummer Down Farm, Dummer near Mitchell Dever. The event will raise money for Hampshire Medical Fund and includes activities such as bushcraft, bubble football, alpaca walks, crocodile encounters and axe throwing. So fun for all the family there. It doesn't say, yes, June the 15th, that one. Field of Dreams as Lavender Farm opens. The lavender fields, located in the Hampshire countryside, just outside Alton, is open to the public on Monday, June the 16th. And you can visit the area between Saturday the 21st of June and 29th of June for Jane Austen's special events. Lavender has been cultivated here at this spot since 1999, and visitors can enjoy a stroll through the vibrant rows of lavender, have a picnic, or indulge in seasonal refreshments from the on-site coffee shop. The shop serves cream teas in July, along with a range of cakes and drinks. And the farm will be open daily from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. from Monday the 16th of June. I haven't read the whole of that article, but I think you've got the gist of it there. Other events that are coming up on Saturday the 7th of June, there's the country market in Romsey. That's starting at 8:30 a.m. In Winchester on the same day, there's the Chili and Cheese Festival. That starts at 10 a.m. That's 7th and 8th of June. That's at River Park Recreation Ground. It says free to £9, so I'm not sure what the how much the tickets actually are there. And they are from admin at Cheese and Chili Festival, all one word, .com. On Sunday the 8th of June, Chilcombe, there's a hog roast lunch, sizzling summer celebration, the hog roast bar, stalls, teas, raffle and a silent auction. That's at 12:30. It's free entry and that's St Andrew's Church, Paddock, Church Lane, Winchester. Yes, at Chilcombe. Then we've got Sherlock Holmes is coming to town. Sherlock Holmes and the Thief of Antiquity on the 11th and 12th of June, 7:30 at the Theatre Royal, Winchester. Tickets are £10 for that. Seems very reasonable. And something completely different, there's a Prosecco Festival on Saturday the 14th of June at 1 o'clock. The tickets for that are £18.50, and that's at the Guildhall on the Broadway. And now here are the lighting up times. On Saturday the 31st of May, the sun will set at 9:09 p.m. And on Wednesday the 4th of May, 4th of June, I beg your pardon, the sun will rise at 4:54 a.m. and will set at 9:13 p.m. And now on to items of general news. Nick, would you like to kick us off, please?
Yes. Refurbed flagship public toilets are a real convenience.
Hurrah!
The public toilets at Abbey Gardens have reopened after a two-month £85,000 revamp. Winchester City Council has transformed the facilities under its Public Toilets Improvement Strategy. The refurbishment of the male, female and disabled facilities have been completed on schedule, and the works include brand new cubicles, sink units, wall tiling, accessories, ventilation and LED lighting. The works to improve these facilities follow last year's £25,000 investment in Market Lane toilets and £40,000 at Chesil Street car park toilets. Councillor Martin Todd, leader of Winchester City Council, said, "We know that decent public toilets really matter to our residents and local businesses, and that's why we're fully committed to improving our public conveniences across the district. Winchester welcomes over 4 million visitors every year, so ensuring our public toilets are accessible, clean and safe is really important to us."
A celebration of nursing achievements at the University of Winchester. The country's future nurses turned out to celebrate International Nurses Day. student nurses and staff at the University of Winchester hosted an event at the West Down Centre to mark the day, which coincides with Florence Nightingale's birthday, which was on Monday, May the 12th. The event, attended by families and practice partners, featured balloons, bunting and cakes, as well as posters showcasing examples of outstanding student work. The day was dedicated to recognising the achievements of nurses, past, present and future, and the important role the university's dedicated programme team plays in nurturing the next generation of nurses. Elizabeth Davis Ward, the Dean of the University's Faculty of Health and Wellbeing, and a trained nurse herself, opened the presentations by reflecting on her own nursing journey. She said, "Nursing requires empathy, resilience, and the willingness to consciously learn. Although the journey might feel like an uphill struggle at times, we must remember the opportunities we have to make a difference to the lives of others, especially when they are at their most vulnerable." Julia Lake, Deputy Director of Nursing at Hampshire Hospital's NHS Foundation Trust, shared her motivations for becoming a nurse and spoke about the inspiring career of Florence Nightingale. She highlighted Florence's remarkable compassion and her use of data and evidence to build a base of knowledge about good practice. Four final year students, all of whom have also served as student reps, gave honest accounts of their learning journey and their next steps beyond university. And there's a photograph of three nursing students with their posters.
Dementia Campaign is backed by Rugby Star. A Rugby World Cup winner highlighted the connection between head injuries suffered in contact sports and dementia whilst visiting Winchester. Steve Thompson, MBE, made the point while promoting the Home Instead Central Hampshire virtual dementia bus in Winchester Broadway on Friday, May the 23rd. Steve, who became a dementia campaigner after being diagnosed with early onset dementia, said there was definitely a link between playing contact sports and his own diagnosis. He said, "It's in a number of sports. Now they've banned heading in under-11s football, and the amount of headers players do in training during the week. And in rugby, it's all about the contact. We were doing 10 hours a week sometimes, and now that's been limited to 15 minutes. We had times when players were knocked out and were back in 6 days, and now it's 3 weeks recovery, and I think that should still be longer. It's because people don't see it. If someone has a pulled hamstring, they're out for 6 weeks. If someone has a brain injury, people don't notice it. My example is, someone goes skiing and they fall over, bang their head. Then they probably go out and have a few beers that night. The next day, they're groggy, so they blame it on the drink. They go back to work, and 4 or 5 weeks later, they're tired and grumpy, and people think it's mental health or stress, but it's actually because they've got a bruised brain." Speaking more broadly on dementia, Steve said, "You look at years gone by, it was the dreaded C word, cancer. Whereas now it's horrendous, but the big word is D at the moment. When you speak to someone about dementia, they've either got someone with it close to them, or their friends, or their cousins. The thing is now you're starting to find people who are younger and younger. You can help it. You can change your lifestyle. For me, the hardest thing was considering I had dementia. And once you look at it, your life changes completely. I look at it as a glass half full. My life has got better with my kids. I now know when to rest and recharge my battery. My quality of life has got better." Also attending the dementia bus was the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Sudhakar Ashwal. He said, "This is an experience I've never had before. My mother had dementia and she passed away because of it. I can now understand how frustrated she would have been. In the dementia bus, My sensory organs were impacted. I couldn't see properly, my touch was gone, my hearing was blanketed. All I could hear was desperate noises, but I couldn't make any sense of it. That feeling of helplessness, not being able to control yourself, is really horrible. That awareness is what the bus gave me, and it's fantastic. People need to visit it and find out for themselves. And there's a picture of Councillor Sudhakar Ashwal and his wife with Steve Thompson in the background. And they're all looking quite pleased as they're standing outside the bus.
And here's another piece about the training of nurses. University Nursing Conference Inspiring. A conference for future learning disability nurses has been described as one of the most inclusive, inspiring, and joyful. The University of Winchester hosted the 21st Positive Choices Conference that celebrates learning disability nurses. Much of the credit is due to the university's learning disability nursing students, who played a significant role in organising the two-day event, which focused the spotlight on the people they support. Jo Welsh, senior lecturer in learning disability nursing, praised the students' efforts. She said, "They worked together to ensure everyone was involved and planned the entire event while still studying and undertaking placements. This was an exceptional achievement." The students aim to give a more central role to people with learning disabilities after receiving feedback from the 2024 conference in Belfast. The Winchester Conference featured sessions co-produced and led by students and people living with learning disabilities. The event began with an opening performance by Macasong, a signing choir. The choir performed throughout the event as flash mobs and taught the entire conference a selection of songs. An array of speakers spoke at the event, including actor Sally Phillips, who is the mother of a young man with a learning disability, and Winchester's Tommy Jessop, who has Down syndrome and starred in Line of Duty.
Catherine's Salad Days. You may remember the musical, I vaguely do, of yesteryear, called Salad Days. Well, this is concerns a performance of this upcoming. A classically trained pianist who has performed with Catherine Jenkins will play in Winchester. Another Catherine, Catherine Rockhill, who has toured with the Welsh opera singer, will be joining the Winchester Musicals and Opera Society this summer. The pianist, who has played in various major films and Netflix series, will be supporting WMOS in their outdoor performance of Salad Days at Wolvesey Palace this July. Suzanne Hall, director of Salad Days, said, "As her musical pedigree suggests, Catherine Rockhill is an extremely talented pianist, and we are very fortunate to once again have her accompanying us. The piano is central to the plot of Salad Days, and her masterful playing is sure to add that special touch which will delight our audiences." The pianist has previously performed with Tubular Bells, performed Tubular Bells with Mike Oldfield at Horse Guards Parade, and played the piano for Tori Amos at the National Theatre. With their innovative staging of both classical musicals and newer shows, it is always a pleasure to perform with Winchester. Salad Days features a bevy of beautiful songs, which I look forward to bringing to life alongside a talented cast in the open air. The musical comedy was originally performed in 1954 and will be performed at Wolvesey Playing Fields, adjacent to Wolvesey Palace, from July the 15th to the 19th. And tickets are now on sale on the Winchester Musicals and Opera Society website.
Scooping Silver Gilt at the Chelsea Show. Sparshort College has won a silver gilt medal at the RHS Chelsea Flower Show. This is the seventh silver gilt medal for the college, which has also won 10 gold medals and 3 bronze medals, as well as 7 best in category awards. Lucy Lewis, horticultural lecturer at Sparshort College, said, "We are really proud of our result. The team has all worked so hard and has fully embraced this year's theme, researching and learning about beneficial insects such as moths, springtails and earwigs. We are delighted to be sharing our garden with visitors at RHS Chelsea Flower Show 2025. And it's been great to see visitors learning how to protect and encourage insects into their green spaces and gardens." Sparshort College's 2025 entry, the Ugly Bug Ball, was created in collaboration with the Royal Entomological Society. The garden aims to show visitors the beauty of insects and how we can encourage these often overlooked but highly beneficial creatures into our gardens and green spaces. The garden was designed by Sparshort's multiple medal-winning team, including several full-time and part-time mature horticultural learners. The exhibit, staged inside the Great Pavilion, explores the various plants and habitats that encourage and support beneficial insects in different horticultural settings. The design and concept were inspired by the Royal Entomological Society's book, RES Insects, Discover the Science and Secrets Behind the World of Insects. Julie Milburn, Sparshort College Group Principal and CEO, said, "We are extremely proud of this year's Sparshort College RHS Chelsea Flower Show team. The students involved have worked tirelessly to help create such an impressive and educational garden. We would like to congratulate everyone for their hard work and thank the academic team for their dedication and commitment to excellence, which has seen the outstanding achievement of a 7th silver gilt." That's accompanied by a couple of photographs, one of the garden that they created. It has a couple of small birch trees and a lot of shrubbery, and notices explaining how beneficial some of the greenery is for insects. And above that, the students lined up holding very proudly their silver gilt medal award. Well done, Sparshort.
Yeah. Cathedral work. Winchester Cathedral will close the Watergate entrance to the inner close on Monday the 2nd of June due to surveying work. The temporary closure will allow for scaffolding to be installed to enable cathedral architects to carry out essential survey work on the surrounding walls, with the closure in place from 7:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Visitors are asked to follow diversion signage in place on the day. The Watergate Close is a permissive footpath leading south from Colebrook Street. It runs adjacent to several historically significant structures, including the walls of Wolsey Castle and the Cathedral Close, and features part of Winchester's historic water garden network. The gate wall has been identified as an area requiring repair due to its condition and the volume of public use. As part of the cathedral's ongoing care of its historic fabric, scheduled monument consent was sought and granted by Historic England. This survey marks the start of the first phase of works to address the most urgent risks, specifically the area above the Watergate. Further work will follow, subject to availability of cathedral funding.
Exhibition of artwork of Woman of Great Courage. This is headed by a photograph of the statue in High Street, Winchester, by Elizabeth Frink, of a person on horseback. naked, I believe, as I recall, and an exhibition that showcases the work of sculptor and artist Dame Elizabeth Frink has opened at Salisbury Museum. Elizabeth Frink, A View from Within, welcomed its first public visitors on Saturday, May the 24th, at the Museum and Cathedral Close. One of Frink, 1930s to 1993, most famous works is the horse and rider piece in Winchester High Street near the Law Courts. The new exhibition displays sculpture, drawings and original prints that explore her artistic processes and the influences that shaped her life and work. They include her childhood in rural Suffolk and wartime experiences such as shooting game for food, which changed her view of the natural world. The exhibition also delves into her reflection on human rights abuses, her humanist beliefs, and other subject matter created at her studio in Woolland, Dorset. Frink was described as a woman of great courage, integrity, and style, who gambled continuously against the odds. The dying wishes of her son, Lynn Janet, were that the entire Frink estate and archive be given to the nation. Elizabeth Frink, A View from Within, was first shown in Dorchester at the Dorset Museum and Art Gallery from December the 23rd, 23, until last April. The exhibition will be at Salisbury Museum until the 28th of September. Museum Director Adrian Green said, "Elizabeth Frink was a visionary artist whose work speaks to the very core of our human experience."
Jane takes on another European epic. Jane the Bike has taken on her latest cycling venture, an epic ride spanning 600 kilometres across continental Europe. Jane Huff, 77, from Hairstock, is part of the way through her 31st solo cycle ride, raising funds for Christian Aid. Her previous journeys have taken her from the Danube all the way to Vienna. This time, the retired healthcare worker is cycling along the River Meuse, starting in Langres in the northeast of France, through Belgium, before finishing in Maastricht in the Netherlands. The route spans approximately 600 kilometres, carving its way through picturesque mountainous regions and national parks. Jane is currently enjoying the forests of the Ardennes, which span across France and Belgium. She's also visited Domremy-la-Pucelle, the birthplace of Joan of Arc. "So far, so good, despite the headwind every day," she said. And the journey is due to last 2 weeks. And that's accompanied by a really splendid picture of Jane with her bike, standing in the sunshine, cycling shorts on, and her top with Christian Aid on the front, and her helmet, sunglasses, and all her belongings packed in the panniers. And behind her, there is a post, and it says James Bond STR, which is a bit mysterious. So I'm just wondering if it might be where James Bond jumped off the mountain and the parachute opened and he came down to Earth. If anyone's got any other ideas, we'd like to know.
Cafe, a real haven for peace and friendship. A well-being cafe in Winchester has celebrated its first anniversary. Renew Wellbeing Winchester, based at the Salvation Army in Parchment Street, has been offering a space for people to come together for coffee and chat since April last year. The cafe, which is run by volunteers from churches across the city, runs two adult-only groups every week on Tuesday and Thursday afternoons from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. The cafe offers free refreshments, games, time for hobbies, a jigsaw puzzle, a chatty corner, and a separate prayer space. The cafe aims to provide a place of peace and friendship, offering a sense of belonging and promoting mental and emotional well-being. The then Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Russell Gordon Smith, visited the cafe last month to mark the occasion and to learn more about the community help provided by the organisation. He said, "I was very impressed by the friendly atmosphere with people dropping through the door. Some to meet old friends, some coming in for the first time. A very relaxed and welcoming atmosphere. Lovely cake too." The mayor was welcomed by Renew Wellbeing leader Alison Dolphin, who explained the purpose of the cafe is to promote social contact and direct people who need particular help to other organisations. They also provide a quiet place for prayer or serious conversation for those who want it. Alison talked about the problems of loneliness and anxiety exacerbated by COVID. The cafe encourages people to join them anytime they want. And she added, "Whether host or regular, we all get to slow down and practice our well-being together. Do join us anytime you want. We would love to see you." For further details, contact Alison Dolphin at, and this is all one word, wellbeingcafeandhub@gmail.com. That's wellbeingcafeandhub, all one word, at gmail.com.
The statue of Jane Austen will be unveiled this autumn. The figure is currently being worked on by Martin Jennings, the sculptor. A spot has been earmarked and prepared outside number 9, The Close, for the unveiling on October the 16th. Interim Dean of the Cathedral, Rowley Ream, said it will be on Thursday the 16th of October. Everything is on track. The clay original looked classical and graceful. The team at Pangolin Editions are now making a mould from the original, from which the bronze will be cast. The sculpture will be 5% larger than life size, which will contribute to the impact of the sculpture and its surrounds in front of the cathedral offices. Martin Jennings has not wanted there to be intrusion into his creative process, so I'm afraid we have no pics to offer. The unveiling takes place in the year of the 150th anniversary of the birth of the novelist, who lived near Alton and died in College Street in 1817, and is buried in the cathedral. The statue has come in for some criticism, with some people arguing it risks spoiling the ambience of the cathedral close. One Austen expert, Elizabeth Proudman, warned that it could turn Winchester into Disneyland on Itchen. While Phil Howe of Jane Austen Tours wrote to the Chronicle accusing the cathedral of cynical cultural misappropriation. What do you think? The cathedral said the statue is on the route of Austen's last journey into the cathedral from the house where she resided in College Street.
New plant comes up smelling of roses. A new plant has been named the Royal Horticultural Society's Chelsea Plant of the Year 2025. Hillier Nurseries and Garden Centres, a Hampshire-based company that started in Winchester, announced that their new plant, Philadelphus Petite Perfume Pink, has been recognised with the prestigious award. The plant, which is being showcased within the Sparshot College garden, was praised for its fragrance, garden performance, and its status as the first ever truly pink-flowered Philadelphus. The award is judged by a panel of RHS experts and recognises the most innovative and high-performing plants introduced to UK gardens each year. The plant was bred by Alan Postill, a highly regarded plant breeder in British horticulture. Mr. Postill started his 60-year career at Hillier in 1962 and retired in 2023. Despite his retirement, his influence continues with new plant introductions. Charles Carr, head of wholesale nurseries at Hillier, said, "To see Petite Perfume Pink win Chelsea Plant of the Year is incredibly special. Not only is it a breakthrough plant in its own right, it's also a shining example of the skill, vision and passion Alan Postill brought to Hillier and to British horticulture. This win is a tribute to him and to everything he's given to our industry." And there's a picture of Charles Carr and then Alan Postill, both smiling with thumbs up, next to a picture of this beautiful plant, a pink-flowered philadelphus.
Big boost for Hospital of St. Cross. On May the 16th, the Friends of St. Cross enjoyed their annual Friends Day with the AGM, a fine tea in the Master's Garden, and a talk from their patron, the very entertaining Major General Alistair Bruce of Creonake, who raced straight from Westminster Abbey, where he had been named a Companion of the Order of the Bath Military Division by King Charles. Major General Bruce regaled the audience with fascinating anecdotes of his recent work as the Sky News commentator in Rome, where he was covering the papal conclave. A man of immense factual recall, he was able to explain the intricacies of the ceremony, delivered with a warm humour that was much appreciated by the audience. John Pringle, chair of the Friends, presented a cheque for £21,000 to Sir Jonathan Portal, chair of the trustees of the Hospital of St. Cross. The Friends of St. Cross is a fundraising charity which raises funds for the hospital for repairs and renovation through organising social events, lectures and outings. If you are interested in joining, please contact Fiona Whitehouse by email on the address is friends@ stcrosshospital.co.uk. That's friends@stcrosshospital.co.uk.
Marathon runner Seb is a Home Start superhero. Home Start Winchester, a family support charity, is celebrating its 20th anniversary. To make the milestone year, friends, family and supporters are coming together, organising various fundraisers and community events. One of the remarkable fundraisers is marathon runner Seb Stannard, who raised £3,325 for Home Start. Seb ran the London Marathon on Sunday, April the 27th, but saw a record number of competitors. He finished the course in under 4 hours, much to the delight and pride of his mum Liz Stannard, the charity's service manager. Liz said, "He's been training so hard, and despite the very hot day and record number of competitors, he completed the run in under 4 hours and raised £3,325 for us. He's our superhero." Seb's effort was acknowledged at the charity's first fun run in the Carroll Centre Community Park in Stanmore, where he had the honour of blowing the starting whistle. The event invited participants to walk, run, jog or toddle as many circuits of the 0.5-kilometre lap as possible within 2.5 hours, clocking up an incredible 100 kilometres between them. It's nice to think that Seb, I believe, has been a Royal Marine following the footsteps of his maternal grandfather.
SWR trains now back under public control. Trains from Winchester Railway Station were among the first in the UK to be run back under public control by Labour. On Sunday, May the 25th, the government's renationalisation of rail services started as trains operated by South Western Railways, SWR, were taken into public control. SWR was previously owned by First Group and MTR Corporation, but is now the responsibility of the Department for Transport. Eventually, the government plans to bring the railway's track and train businesses together under one organisation called Great British Railways. All other services run by private companies will be renationalised as contracts reach the end of their minimum terms. The process is scheduled to be completed by the end of 2027. The first renationalised SWR service under public ownership was a rail replacement bus. After the implementation of renationalisation at 2 a.m, passengers travelling on the 5:36 a.m. service from Woking to London Waterloo had to change to a bus at Surbiton because of engineering work. Speaking before boarding the 6:14 a.m. service to Shepperton, Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander said, "Today marks a new dawn for our railways, moving away from 30 years of inefficiency, delayed services and failing passengers, and moving confidently into a new era, the era of Great British Railways."
Hampshire County Council elects a new chairman. Hampshire County Council has elected a new chairman. Councillor Mark Cooper, who represents the Romsey Town electoral division, was elected to the position at the annual meeting of the local authority on Thursday, May the 22nd. In his role as chairman, Councillor Cooper will be the civic head of the county. He will represent the county council on any royal visits and ceremonial occasions in Hampshire, as well as carry out other civic activities and duties. The chairman presides over county council meetings and ensures they are conducted in line with standing orders. Hampshire born and educated, Councillor Cooper was first elected to Hampshire County Council in 2005 to represent the Romsey Town Division. During this time, he has served on the River Hamble Harbour Authority Management Committee. He was a member of Hampshire's Fire and Rescue Authority between 2005 and 2017 and a commissioner on Hampshire's 2050 Commission of Inquiry, dedicated to help shape the long-term vision for the whole of Hampshire, enhance the future prosperity and quality of life of Hampshire's residents, as well as protect the environment and tackle climate change. Councillor Pal Hare, local member for Fareham Crofton, has been elected as vice chairman.
Many lifeline charity groups and clubs at risk of closure. Brendan Care, which provides services for elderly people throughout Hampshire and southern England, said many clubs earmarked for closure will actually now remain open. In a press release, it said, "A number of community clubs in Hampshire and Dorset were placed at risk of closure pending discussions with other local organisations who might be willing to step in and support them to continue. Following these discussions and with the support of its volunteers, Brendan Care has announced that more than 90% of the clubs will remain open, with alternative providers now running them. To support the continuation of the clubs, Brendan Care has donated equipment to them and also organised a series of informational webinars for volunteers interested in taking their clubs forward independently." The announcement followed a review by the charity, which looked into the community services it provides for older people.
The Cricketers is the UK's cleverest pub. A Winchester pub has been crowned the UK's smartest. The Cricketers Inn in Easton topped the leaderboard in the Marston's Big Pub Quiz, a nationwide competition that has been running since Thursday, May the 1st. The victory not only brings bragging rights, but also a grant of up to £1,000 from the Marston's Charitable Foundation. This will be used to support a local community project. The Cricketers Inn has chosen to donate the grant to St Mary's Church in Easton, a Grade 1 listed building dating back to the 12th century. The money will go towards essential repairs to the church's roof, ensuring it remains a safe community hub. Representatives from the Cricketers Inn and St Mary's Church will be presented with the grant by Paddy McGuinness in June. Andrew William Kent, landlord of the Cricketers Inn, said, "We're absolutely delighted to have been named Smartest Pub of the Week, and even prouder to put the £1,000 from the Marston's Charitable Foundation towards vital roof repairs at St Mary's Church here in Easton. A huge thank you to Kat, Henry, Eloise, Loz, Wolf, and my amazing wife, Steph. We couldn't have done it without you. We'll be cheering Eloise on as she goes for the grand prize next week, and we'll certainly be trying to claim the title again. The Marston's Big Pub Quiz, hosted by Paddy McGuinness, has been welcoming locals into more than 200 pubs across the country each week to test their general knowledge."
Monument helped inspire hit UK song. A Winchester monument has been named among a group of significant UK landmarks that helped inspire hit songs. The Buttercross Monument was featured in the song Wessex Boy by the musician Frank Turner.
I know it.
It comes as National Rail has released a new interactive map of Great Britain containing 200 places featured in the songs, music artwork and music videos of various artists. These spots, from the Smiths' Cemetery Gates to Taylor Swift's Black Dog Pub, can all be visited by train. The National Rail study analysed the lyrics of the top 100 songs in the UK chart every year since 1960. Over 6,000 different songs and millions of individual lyrics, looking for mentions of real places in Britain that can be visited today. The analysis covered chart toppers from decades past, such as the Beatles and the Kinks, through to contemporary stars such as Ariana Grande and Lewis Capaldi. The study is being released as National Rail launches a new series of audio guides presented by broadcaster Joe Wiley. The guides cover key geographical areas of Britain and reveal the links they have with a range of homegrown and international acts, plus how eager music fans can explore these locations by train. Jacqueline Starr, Executive Chair and CEO at Rail Delivery Group, explained, "With this year marking the 200th anniversary of the birth of the modern railway, we wanted to highlight the role rail has played in inspiring music artists and how it continues to help connect Britons to the people, places and experiences they love." Frank Turner, 43, was brought up in Meonstoke in Hampshire and spent time in Winchester as well. And of course this piece is accompanied by a picture of the Buttercross Monument and next to it the Wessex Boys star Frank Turner.
That song is the only one I know that actually name checks Jury Street in it. I've seen Frank Turner a couple of times. Last piece, please.
This is to do with police learning sign language. Hampshire and Isle of Wight constabulary officers have received sign language training to help them communicate with deaf people. BSL trained sergeant Matt Jones said the course had already proved beneficial during a domestic abuse incident involving a deaf family. "Drawing on what I had learned, I was able to provide clear guidance to the attending officers, helping them understand best practices for communication with the people involved and what to avoid, especially since they were not able to sign themselves. When someone reports a crime, there must be clear and effective communication between the victim and the police. Deaf people need to have the same level of access to their policing services as everyone else. This initiative is a small but significant step towards better serving the deaf community and fostering a closer relationship.
And finally, Daphne.
Celebration for unpaid carers. A home care provider is planning an afternoon of free homemade cakes to celebrate Carers Week. Every Care, Central Hants, is inviting carers and the community to the event on Thursday, June the 12th. The afternoon tea celebration will take place at Victoria Hall in Sutton Scotney between 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. The event aims to honour the contribution unpaid carers make, providing them and others with the chance to socialise and enjoy treats free of charge. With no necessity to book, organisers are encouraging people to drop in at their convenience.
Well, I'm sorry to say that's all we have for you this week. When you've finished with recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet, place the correct address label on the front, and return it as soon as possible. Thanks to all the support teams for the preparation and dispatch of this edition. And of course, many thanks to our readers, Daphne Poupart.
Goodbye.
Nick Kearns.
Goodbye.
And Paul Newman.
Go well.
And from me, Barbara Kearns, thank you for listening. And until next time, goodbye and have a great week.